Fanny Hill, or Memoirs of a Woman of Pleasure, by John Cleland. Letter the First. Madam, I sit down to give you an undeniable proof of my considering your desires as indispensable orders. Ungracious, then, as the task may be, I shall recall to view those scandalous stages of my life, out of which I emerged at length to the enjoyment of every blessing in the power of love, health, and fortune to bestow. Whilst yet in the flower of youth, and not too late to employ the leisure afforded me by great ease and affluence, to cultivate an understanding, naturally not a despicable one, and which had, even amidst the whirl of loose pleasures I had been tossed in, exerted more observation on the manners of the world than what is common to those of my unhappy profession, who, looking on all reflection as their capital enemy, keep it at as great a distance as they can, or destroy it without mercy. Hating, as I mortally do, all long unnecessary preface, I shall give you good quarter in this, and use no farther apology than to prepare you for seeing the loose part of my life, wrote with the same liberty that I led it. Truth. Stark, naked truth is the word, and I will not so much as take the pains to bestow the strip of a gauze wrapper on it, but paint situations such as they actually rose to me in nature, careless of violating those laws of decency that were never made for such unreserved intimacies as ours. And you have too much sense, too much knowledge of the originals themselves, to sniff prudishly and out of character at the pictures of them. This, and enough premised, I go souse into my personal history. My maiden name was Frances Hill. I was born at a small village near Liverpool in Lancashire, of parents extremely poor and, I piously believe, extremely honest. My education, till past 14, was no better than very vulgar. Reading, or rather spelling, an illegible scrawl, and a little ordinary plain work composed the whole system of it. And then all my foundation in virtue was no other than a total ignorance of vice, and the shy timidity general to our sex in the tender stage of life when objects alarm more by their novelty than anything else. But then this is a fear too often cured at the expense of innocence, when Miss, by degrees, begins no longer to look on a man as a creature of prey that will eat her. I was now entering on my 15th year, when the worst of ills befell me in the loss of my tender fond parents, who were both carried off by the smallpox within a few days of each other, so that I was now left an unhappy, friendless orphan. That cruel distemper, which had proved so fatal to them, had indeed seized me, but with such mild and favourable symptoms that I was presently out of danger, and, what I then did not know the value of, was entirely unmarked. I skip over here an account of the natural grief and affliction which I felt on this melancholy occasion. A little time, and the giddiness of that age, dissipated, too soon, my reflections on that irreparable loss. But nothing contributed more to reconcile me to it than the notions that were immediately put into my head of going to London and looking out for a service, in which I was promised all assistance and advice from one Esther Davis, a young woman that had been down to see her friends, and who, after the stay of a few days, was to return to her place. As I had now nobody left alive in the village who had concern enough about what should become of me to start any objections to this scheme, and the woman who took care of me after my parents' death rather encouraged me to pursue it, I soon came to a resolution of making this launch into the wide world by repairing to London in order to seek my fortune. Nor did Esther Davis a little comfort and inspirit me to venture with her, by piquing my childish curiosity with the fine sights that were to be seen in London, the tombs, the lions, the king, the royal family, the fine plays and operas, and, in short, all the diversions which fell within her sphere of life to come at, the detail of all which perfectly turned the little head of me. The idea, however, of having the company of a townswoman with her was the trivial, and all the motives that engaged Esther to take charge of me during my journey to town, where she told me, after her manner and style, as how several maids out of the country had made themselves and all their kin for ever, that by preserving their virtue, some had taken so with their masters that they had married them, and kept them coaches, and lived vastly grand and happy, and some, mayhap, came to be duchesses. Luck was all, and why not I, as well as another? At my departure, the whole of my remaining fortune was put into my hands, which consisted of a very slender wardrobe, packed up in a very portable box, and 8 guineas with 17 shillings in silver, stowed up in a spring pouch, which was a greater treasure than ever I have yet seen together, and which I could not conceive there was a possibility of running out. And indeed, I was so entirely taken up with the joy of seeing myself mistress of such an immense sum that I gave very little attention to a world of good advice which was given me with it.